I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a hilarious book, a new book out, one that's difficult to put down and one that's quite thoughtful too. It also has a hell of a title, On the Outside Looking Indian. Rupinder Gill is its author, who joins me now from here in Vancouver. She promotes it. It's been compared to the comedy of Russell Peters in some parts. But what it has are the ruminations of someone trying to come to terms with her Indian heritage and that of the North American culture she grew up in Ontario, and that which he saw on television. See, good Indian girls stayed home, cleaned, and took care of their siblings, and didn't sleep over at friends' houses, go to Disneyland, or take piano or dance lessons. So at 30, Ms. Gill decided to do the things she missed out on growing up, and the journey is at once reflective as it is funny. It's a great book, On the Outside Looking Indian, How My Second Childhood Changed My Life, is highly relatable, whether you're Indian or, like me, the son of immigrants, or if you were babysat by reruns of television sitcoms and dramas. It is published by McClelland & Stewart. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Rupinder Gill. Good morning, Ms. Gill.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, your name has been familiar to me for a few years now, because I would get the press releases that you'd send out for that.
Oh, okay.
Television company that you used to do publicity for. I gather you're no longer there.
No, I am not.
Yeah. So tell us a story about what happened a couple years ago. You wanted to take leave of the company, like a leave of absence, but they wouldn't let you.
So to rewind a bit, all of the activities in the book sort of started a year earlier, where I was away with my girlfriends from high school, and we were away at somebody's cottage, and they were all swimming and having a great time, and I couldn't swim. So I decided I was finally going to learn how to swim, and then I thought there were so many other things I didn't do in childhood, and I was going to do all those things too. So I started pursuing those things in January, because of course, you know, everything is more successful if you do it in the new year.
Yeah.
And I was going through the year, and I was taking tap lessons, I took tennis lessons, I was doing all these things, and I felt great about myself, and I enjoyed learning something again. And it came to the point in the summer where I would need to take some time off to be able to actually finish the activities, as some of them involved travel. And at that point, I was also going to be writing this book. I'd started the activities well before anybody had a thought of me writing about it. So I'd asked for some time off to do it. And unfortunately, because it was the summer and everything in TV launches in September, it's just a really busy time of year. And they said, we're not going to be able to give you the time off. And then I was at a crossroads, and I had to think, what am I going to do here now? I value this job. I would never feel comfortable not working. But at the same time, I've had this great eye-opening year where I've done all these things that I thought I wouldn't do, and I've achieved these goals that I thought I wouldn't ever achieve. And am I going to stop now? So I really thought about it for a really long time, and I, you know, surprised to everyone, most of all myself, I went in there on the next week, and I said, okay, well, then unfortunately I have to quit. And so I did so, and then I, thought I may as well go completely crazy and fulfill another childhood dream and move to New York for a while and continue on with the activities in the book. And happily, it all turned out quite well.
Your parents thought you were nuts for quitting the job, right?
Oh, I didn't even tell my parents. My parents would have a heart attack knowing I'd quit a job. So I told them that I was just doing a leave of absence. They obviously know that I'm not working there anymore. But they were supportive of it because, you know, they didn't live the type of life, and they still don't, where they would ever, as adults, have the luxury of taking a pause in their life and asking themselves if it was what they wanted to do. And so, you know, I was so lucky that I got to do that, and they understood why I needed to do that, and then were supportive of it.
So as I said, I'm reading the book now, and when you start the book, I could see, and I'm sure a lot of people could see, or think, starting the book, that your parents won't come across too well in it, that they were, because they were the source of this deprivation that you had as a child. Do you girls, they're four Gill sisters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you begrudge the parents that?
Well, I think, you know, childhood is, no matter what your background, I think so much of childhood is about begrudging your parents for the things that you want and don't have. So back then we were a little bit, upset when we would get a no, but as I write in the book, and especially throughout that year, I really began to understand my parents, and that as kids, you just have a desire to have everything you want, and you're not thinking through the fact that perhaps that's costly to do that times five kids, or perhaps that is just a luxury I want, and not every kid is doing that. And so I started to understand where my parents were coming from, and I started to really feel very grateful for the childhood I had, because we got a lot of no's, but we still had a fun life, and we still had fun with one another. And I understood that they, you know, they were doing all these things for us, and everything in their life was just for us, and they would never go on a luxury vacation because they wanted to make sure there was money for us to go to school. So as the year wore on, I really started to understand my parents a lot more, and I was very grateful for all of the sacrifices they had made in their lives to give us the lives that we have now.
So in the book, weekends for you, we're pretty much staying home cleaning and then watching TV in the basement, right?
Yes, that was my life.
Yeah, and so that was for the four sisters. Now, when some years later, your brother's born. He's the youngest. His life was very much different than yours. Is that just because he was a guy?
No, I think, you know, it's also that there's such a large age gap between us. And so even with my youngest sister, my parents had softened a lot at that point. So because I was the second oldest, there were a lot of rules in place that really kind of fell by the wayside as years went on, as is the case with any parents, I think, of any culture. You're very scared of the world and your kids in it at the beginning, and then later on you realize, that's not that big a deal. So my younger sister went to camp and my little brother went to camp, and we were always really happy that they had those opportunities because we wished we had them, and we were happy that our parents had come around to realizing that those are good experiences for kids.
Does it surprise you that this is not just something that Indian families go through here in Canada, or in the United States for that matter, but that a lot of immigrant children go through this, that it's almost universal?
No, I think that that's something that I like about the book, is that it is universal. Even if this wasn't your background, I think you can relate to it in some way, shape, or form, or, you know, not even the childhood element of it, the whole sort of second story of my year. I think every adult, no matter your background, there's something in your life you wish you had done, or there are goals you haven't achieved that you wish that you had. And so I think there is something in there for everyone to relate to.
Growing up, did you always write?
No. I would write for fun here and there, but never in my life, and this is all the way through university, did I ever think that writing was a viable career or a career that I would ever go into. It was just one of those things, I guess, when you watch a movie and you turn it off and think, oh, that's great life for them, not something realistic for me. And I always felt that way about writing. I would read a lot as a kid. I would write creative writing stuff in school, but I just thought that was sort of a fun little pastime, and it wasn't a realistic life choice for me, at least, and so I never pursued it in any way.
As I said in the intro, you're pretty funny in this book. Were you naturally funny growing up, or did the TV that you watched contribute to your sense of humor?
There were always a lot of laughs in my household. My dad would always tell funny stories. We always liked to joke around as kids. I think we always saw the humor in everything, and I still live my life that way. I think I'd rather see the humor in things than the tragedy. So, I don't know. I think, you know, I just appreciate the funny things in life, and so that is why the book has a lot of humor in it, because that's how, those are my memories of childhood, and that's still sort of the worldview that I have.
And you're pleased that it translated into the book, right? Because one can be funny, you know, if we're chatting with one another, say at lunch or something. But when you write it, sometimes it doesn't necessarily translate, right?
Yeah, exactly. And funnily enough, before I started writing this book, which I actually had no plans to write, I was just doing the activities in the book until somebody suggested I meet someone, and then an idea came up about writing about it, and that was the first time that I actually thought I should try other types of writing. So I've done a bunch of print humor writing since then for sites like McSweeney's, and I do things for CBC Radio, and I never realized that most of what I write is sort of humor, because that's just how I see everything, is in a sort of ridiculous way. So I am glad that translated in the book.
Now, the other thing that I noticed about the book that I really liked about it was that you write quite lovingly about TV. People look down on TV, and you know, especially so the sort of TV that you watched growing up. That was, I guess, your only connection to life outside your house, right? Outside the basement.
Yeah, it's funny because in life I ended up pursuing a career that was in TV,
yeah.
Which I go back and say that maybe all of this TV watching when I was a kid was a great thing for me because it's what I love, and I loved watching Dallas every night, and I learned a lot from Rose and Blanche and the Golden Girls, and it was a great way for me to see what was going on in the rest of the world, and it was also, it's kind of stuff that I find funny now. It's translated well 20 years later, and I still love TV, and I agree some people always look down on it as a low art form, and I think it is such a great entertainment. I don't know what I would do without TV.
Do you still watch a lot of TV?
I sure do.
Yeah. Are there shows, like, what are some of the shows that you like nowadays?
I watch a lot of comedies. I watch all of the late shows and whatnot. I love 30 Rock, all of those sort of sitcoms that I would have watched as a kid. I'm still watching now. I'm still watching a lot of the reruns,
yeah,
of the shows that I would watch as a kid, because watching them 20 times just isn't enough for me. I need a 21st.
Yeah. Yeah, like Three's Company, I still watch that on weekends.
Oh, I have the DVDs.
Yeah, yeah, the same. And it's just, I mean, I know it's like, what, 30 years old now, some of the episodes, but I mean, it's still great.
Yeah.
Growing up, did you hate the Huxtables and the sort of life that they had?
I really hated that Rudy Huxtable. But I think any kid would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think I did not understand that family structure and why Cliff always had to wear those sweaters and was so understanding, yet so tough on Theo, and it was just this world that I did not understand at all, which is why I actually got a bit tired of The Cosby Show and thought, I'd rather watch these oil barons living at South Fork Ranch. It's just more entertaining, relatable humor to me. I can relate more to Sue Ellen Ewing than I really can to any of the Huxtable kids.
This brings up an interesting question about race. And looking at race from the TV that you watch, as a kid, did you have a concept that perhaps these people weren't like you?
I didn't. I feel like TV is such a great equalizer that way,
yeah,
that though you're not represented in it, in a way back in the 80s, nobody was represented in it. So it's different now. There's so much more pop culture that features Indians, which is wonderful. Growing up, of course, there was nothing, but I felt like a lot of the people I was watching on TV, I really had nothing in common with any of them, and I just realized I wasn't going to.
So in the book, you do the things that you didn't do as a child. You go to camp, you have a pet. Did you still have a pet?
I didn't actually end up getting the dog, which was one of the great things that happened in this book, is that I really had no idea how the book or the year was going to end, and one of my great goals was to have a dog, because when we were growing up, we would beg for a dog all the time, and my mom would say, I have enough animals in this house, I don't need another one. And once we all decided it was a wonderful plan for us to put down a deposit on a dog and just go to a breeder, and we would smooth it over with our parents later, and then we did that, and then when my sisters and my brother went to the breeder, we really realized this is not going to work out at all. So we'd always had these dreams of having a dog. And then throughout my year of doing all these experiences, my older sister, who'd also always wanted a dog, decided she was actually going to go get one. So she went and got a dog, and he's now sort of our family dog. And I realized, wow, a dog is a lot of work. Plus, as the year went on, I changed my goals, and now I have these other goals that are more related to career, and I realized this isn't maybe the right time for me to have a dog, because they need the stability that I perhaps can't offer right now.
And you talk about changing the goals.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that you wanted to do as a kid, you realized they weren't all that they were cracked up to be, right?
Yeah, and you have to realize that as an adult, and I think that's part of letting go of your childhood regrets and resentments. You really can't have a sleepover at 30. It's not the same. You don't want to sleep on the floor. You probably didn't earlier either.
Yeah. You told iWeekly that your parents have mellowed, and you mentioned that earlier, that your dad's quite progressive now. what do you think happened? Is that just being in Canada in a certain number of years, you just sort of become acclimatized to it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And what do they feel guilty, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that they, you know, they did the best that they could, and I admire them. They had a lot of challenges, and, you know, we generally had a great life, but, yeah, I think that they, you know, all parents just want the best for their kids, and My parents did what they thought was the best for us.
What have they thought about the book? Have they read it?
They have. That was the one review I was waiting for.
Yeah.
And my dad read it a few weeks before it came out, and he was happy with it, which made me really happy.
Do you think about how you'll do as a parent?
Yeah, I feel like I'll be sort of a bit like my parents. I realized that all the things I didn't have as a kid gave me a lot of character. I think if I'd had everything I wanted as a kid, I would just be Paris Hilton. And I'm thankful for the life that I had, and I'm thankful for the life I have now. So I do see a lot of logic as to how my parents parented us. And I feel like, you know, throughout this year, I realized that, and that I would probably, as a parent, be very similar to them.
You mentioned Sue Ellen Ewing earlier and relating to her. Was that the TV character that you related to most?
No, not at all. It's just one that I found most entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't know that I really related to any of them. I felt like I wasn't like any of them. And as a kid, it's really hard to, no matter your background, it's really hard to feel that you fit in anywhere. So it was just nice to have this escapism.
What did your siblings think of the book?
They all liked it, and my sisters all read it many times through because they were my fact checkers.
Mm-hmm.
So they would all read it and say, oh, I didn't say that, or somebody else said that, or that happened a year later, but they were all really happy with it. It was kind of a family project getting it put together.
Now, I understand you're working on another book?
I am.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that, or do we have to just wait?
No, it's a bit of a follow-up to this one. So there was a lot that didn't fit into this book, and it's a book of essays, but it's more focused on all of the wonderful, and I say that very sarcastically, jobs that I had through the years, starting with my first job, of course, at the iconic Tim Hortons, right through to my high-flying cashier job at Walmart, and then the summer after university when I went home to work in the tire factory with my dad. And it's just sort of more stories of childhood and growing up and trying to fit in, but more related to all of the jobs that I've had through the years.
I also read about you somewhere else. I can't remember where now. I guess you were all born in Ontario, right? All the children. You guys would go back to India on occasion, would you?
Yeah, we would never all go at the same time, but I actually had a chance to go about 3 years ago, which was the first time I had been since I was a baby. So my mom and I went together, and it was a really eye-opening experience as well. And when you're complaining about your childhood and not getting to go to tennis lessons, and then you go to India and see the reality of how other people live their life there, you do feel a bit of a fool to be complaining about having a life that's already so much easier than other people's is.
And as you get older, and because I went through this, my parents are from the Philippines, I was born here, I really didn't feel a connection to the place until I was much older. Is that the same with you?
Yeah, that's exactly the same. I really had no Indian friends growing up, and I feel like I blamed my background as the reason I couldn't go out and do things, so I didn't have a lot to do with it, and there weren't any Indian Huxtables to watch on TV, so there wasn't a lot of ways for me to relate to it. But growing older, I have such a desire to get back to it and to embrace it and to find my own place in it, and so I'd like to go back there myself sometime in the next year, and I'm trying to learn how to be a better Indian cook, and I just feel like as an adult, you really embrace what makes you different, and you want to know more about your background and heritage.
And do you do some work for TV still?
I've done some TV writing now, which is sort of what I'm looking to segue into, which was a great experience. So I'm hoping to keep going with that and with books.
Yeah. As I've said, this is a great book, one that's funny and thoughtful. Congratulations on it. Continued good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
It's a great book and a very fine achievement, and I hope it's a big success. The book is called On the Outside Looking Indian, How My Second Childhood Changed My Life. It's published by McClelland and Stewart. Rupinder Gill, its author, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunter.